from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Voitin.
Good morning. Happy Monday, and thank you for listening to the G and Ursula Show. Good morning to you, Ursula.
Good morning, G. Happy Monday, everyone. We're going to do everything that we can today to make sure that it doesn't feel like a Monday, even though we know it wasn't the best sports weekend, even though we know it's a little bit cloudy and
kind
of cool.
Stop. Just get, as G would say, get right into it.
Hey, today is a Monday. You understand me?
Well, we're going to try Monday, to make it not feel like that.
The Monday of Mondays.
Yeah.
All right. Big show. Can you let the good people know what's coming up on the show today, Ursula?
Yeah, absolutely. So coming up at 11 o'clock, we are going to introduce you to another Seattle City Council candidate. This is for the seat that was vacated by Lorena Gonzalez as she is running for mayor. And it is one of the most important races that Seattle voters are going to be deciding this November. So you will meet Sarah Nelson coming up at 11 o'clock. Also, coming up at 9:47, you have a question about if someone is going to be showing their big weight loss and updates on their weight loss, and it turns out they had surgery. Do you think that they need to disclose that in showing off their weight loss? And I think you and I are going to disagree on that one. But right now, what time is it?
It is time for Ursula's Top 5 News Stories of the Day, brought to you by Economy Fence.
And our top story this morning is the death of an American hero. Former Secretary of State Colin Powell died today of complications from COVID. He was 84 years old. He was vaccinated. Powell passed away at Walter Reed Military Medical Center, where he had also undergone treatment for multiple myeloma, a cancer that had compromised his immune system. Reporter Meg Oliver takes a look at his remarkable career.
When President Bush appointed Colin Powell as Secretary of State, he became the highest-ranking African-American official in the history of the United States. His was a true American success story. His parents were Jamaican immigrants who raised him in the South Bronx. After graduating from the City College of New York, he took an Army commission and served in Vietnam. He rose in the ranks, becoming a general, and was appointed the head of the National Security Council by President Ronald Reagan. More honors were to follow. During the next administration, President George Herbert Walker Bush made Powell chairman of Joint Chiefs of Staff, the highest military position in the Defense Department. Again, Powell was the first African-American to hold the post. Operation Desert Storm in 1991 made Powell an even more familiar face.
Our strategy to go after this army is very, very simple. First, we're going to cut it off.
When he retired from the Army, Powell wrote his autobiography and chaired America's Promise, a nonprofit organization dedicated to building character in young people. There was speculation he might run for president, but his wife, Alma, was against it. Then Powell was called upon by George W. Bush.
I am honored to be given the opportunity to return to public service as the 65th Secretary of State.
Though initially opposed to the idea, Powell agreed to go along with the Bush administration's plan to forcibly overthrow Saddam Hussein. Using his greatest asset, his popularity with the public, he went before the United Nations and the world to build a case for invading Iraq.
Saddam Hussein and his regime are concealing their efforts to produce more weapons of mass destruction.
Later, after the United States was firmly entrenched in the war, inaccuracies were found in Powell's speech, and the Bush administration said it acted on faulty intelligence. Powell admitted the UN speech was a painful blot on his record and pushed for reform in the intelligence community.
I'm so proud that I have had this chance to serve my nation.
In 2008, the longtime Republican made news when he endorsed Barack Obama for president. Powell spent his final years in the private sector, but he remained vocal on political issues that were important to him.
Again, Colin Powell died today at the age of 84 from complications from COVID. And I know this was the first thing that you had sent to me this morning, and I know this really affected you.
Yeah, it did. And, you know, just, it was a shocker, right? You wake up this morning, it's fun, one of the first news things that you see. And when you see that and that happens, it's, wow, it's Colin Powell. You know, and I remember being back in military school back years ago when Desert Storm was happening during those times, and it was both General Colin Powell and General Norman Schwarzkopf, and those are my memories. That's where it kind of starts. And then over the years, we know General Norman Schwarzkopf passed away in 2012, and then here we are, you know, right now with Colin Powell passing away. It was definitely unfortunate and sad.
To me, he's one of those once-in-a-generation kind of people. He was courted by Republicans and Democrats to run for president. I personally thought he would have been a great president. I absolutely would have voted for him. I love the fact that he described himself in a New York Times interview back in 2007. He said, "I'm a problem solver. I was taught as a soldier to solve problems. I have views, but I'm not an ideologue. I have passion, but I'm not a fanatic. First and foremost, I am a problem solver." And he was also someone who could admit to mistakes. It's like, yeah, you know, in hindsight, there, you know, we didn't have all the information to make that decision that we made. And then he worked on that to try to improve. And he said, you know, we're going to use this information and what we have learned to improve our intelligence. And again, how often can you think of anyone today who could be courted by both Republicans and Democrats to run for president?
No, not today. No, I don't. That's a very good point, Ursula. No, not right. Not today. I definitely couldn't see that. That was someone who, for sure, not Condoleezza Rice. No, probably just Colin Powell would be that one.
The other thing is him dying from COVID-related complications. He was 84 years old, and what many people might not realize is that he was being treated for multiple myeloma, which is the cancer that killed my brother within a year. Many people can live with it for years. It's not curable, but it can be kept at bay. But it is a cancer that obviously compromised his immune system, and he was vaccinated, but he died this morning. It's very sad. Today is the deadline for most state health care and school workers to show that they have been vaccinated against COVID or get fired. The vast majority of employees have gotten their shots as we've been reporting, but there are some who are leaving their jobs over the vaccine mandate. Trooper Robert LeMay has worked for the State Patrol for 22 years, and he videotaped his final call on the radio on Friday when he was thanking his colleagues and the community of Yakima County. And then he also had some choice words for Governor Inslee.
This is my final sign-off. After 22 years of serving the citizens of the state of Washington, being asked to leave because I am dirty. Numerous fatalities, injuries. I've worked sick. I've played sick. We buried lots of friends over these years. I'd like to thank you guys. I'd like to thank the citizens of Yakima County, as well as my fellow officers within the valley. Without you guys, I wouldn't have been very successful, and you've kept me safe and got me home to my family every night. Thank you for that. Wish I could say more, but this is it. So State 1034, this is the last time you'll hear me in a state patrol car, and Jay Inslee can kiss my ass.
Just a couple of quick notes. The state patrol's vaccination rate is at about 90%. So this could mean that the agency loses dozens of troopers. And most state agencies are reporting a more than 90% compliance rate. With the healthcare workers, we're looking at about 88%. But again, we're looking for some new numbers today. The Seattle Fire Department is going to be holding a news conference in a couple of hours talking about what they're going to do if they end up losing a lot of people. So we're not going to know for a couple of days.
And we still don't know any of the numbers for the teachers as well. So those are not also some other numbers that we're going to be finding out. You know, Ursula, COVID, we're in a pandemic, and there has been some real tough times during this time. And when stories like today, or stories like someone whose immune system is compromised, or somebody has an underlying health condition, you hear about stories of COVID maybe taking that life, and or we are reminded how we're still not out of this pandemic. And so it's not a good thing at all. I hate that politics is in it. I hate that there is this posturing that's going on, because at the end of the day, Ursula, the true enemy is COVID.
I'll agree with the true enemy being COVID, and we always lose sight of that. But I cannot help but feel sorry. You know, even this guy who you know, goes out in a blaze of glory with, you know, his final words for the governor. I hate to see people lose their careers over this. And I have said that. I know it's a bit of a softening on my position. And my question is there some way, I mean, if we get to, the vast majority have taken the vaccine. I mean, is there some way, especially in these areas where you need folks, we can't afford to lose any more. And if they're not going to, you know, for whatever reason, they're not going to take it. Is there any way to make them do testing like they do in some other states where they don't have to lose their job over it? I mean, that's where I'm at right now. And I again, I'm in favor of the vaccine mandate. I just hate to see people losing their jobs over it. Which sounds like a contradiction, but I think there is a middle ground, which would be then get regular testing, which is what's done in other areas. Getting to Seattle Public Schools by bus today was no easy feat. Starting today, the district suspended more than 140 school bus routes because of the vaccine mandate, which is exacerbating a national bus driver shortage. The district's Fred Podesta estimates nearly 4,000 students could be affected by these cuts.
We will continue to work with school principals and others in school communities to find, of the routes that we have suspended, which had high ridership and which have students that really are dependent on our transportation services, and try to restore, prioritize those to be restored.
It's interesting to note that the Seattle Times is reporting that Bellevue, Lake Washington, and the Issaquah school districts don't expect any major problems in terms of busing because of the vaccine mandate.
Well, I was looking at it and breaking it down, Ursula. 140 bus routes suspended. 18,000 students are those that are eligible for this, but they say anywhere every day they only think about between 3,000 to 7,000 kids ride daily. Now, here's what stood out to me in this entire story. Who's in charge? Who is in charge for this? Because this sounds like that there was dragging of the feet to hire more, to prepare more. This whole mandate and all of this stuff, we've been talking about this for a while now, right? And so here's a situation where, granted, I know school bus drivers don't get the attention that nurses and police officers get, but this has been something. And so, by the way, they do tell people if you have a question about your child's school bus route, you need to make sure you call your individual school to find out those things. But Ursula, my problem is the hiring of people. My problem is who is the one person that's in charge? There's somebody that is in charge of this bus deal. And whoever that person is, their role, they drop the ball. And I'm not even sure there is a person for that role.
Oh, there absolutely is. They have someone who's in charge of transportation for the Seattle School District. And they also contract out. I think the bigger problem is something that you talk about all the time. You don't pay bus drivers enough.
Nope.
Bus drivers should be considered an essential worker. I was looking, and the base salary for school bus drivers is anywhere from $31,000 to $47,000 a year. That's not generally a livable wage in this area. According to Glassdoor, based on what bus drivers have reported as their hourly, it's about $24 an hour. I'm sorry. You're going to have to pay more. If you're dealing now with a national bus shortage, this preceded even the pandemic. Mm-hmm. I think again, and we said this at the beginning of the pandemic, this is going to make you rethink what you consider an essential worker. And some of those in the lowest paying jobs need to be considered essential and paid more. Well, it is October 18th. And apparently, G, do you know that we are on track to have one of the coldest Octobers in a long time?
Mm-mm.
The National Weather Service says in Seattle, the first half of the month was the coldest it has been since 1990. The average temperature was just below 52 degrees. That's about 4 degrees below normal. And the coldest ever first half of October was all the way back in 1946, when the average temp was 49.3 degrees. And just a reminder, this winter is expected to be a La Nina winter, which means that we could see more snow and rain than usual. How you feel about that?
You know what? Nothing's out of the blue to me, though. Yeah. I mean,
you don't
October,
even know that it's cold?
I don't know. Yeah. It's like this is like it's we're winding into November. Here's what I do know. I know usually since I've lived here for over 27 years, I've learned that when you hit Halloween day, not the 27th, October 31st, whatever day that lands on this year, it lands on a Sunday, whatever day that is. There's some kind of light switch that gets turned off and on here in Seattle. And that date, there's a switch that happens. So this weather that we've been getting, that is a little cuddle weather.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's last when we fall back, then you really feel it.
Last night, and the meals show that. Last night, we had chili and cornbread for the Seahawks game, right? Mm-hmm. So a lot of comfort foods, a lot of weight gaining foods for your boy is happening right now.
Okay, unfortunately, we do have to acknowledge, you mentioned it, the Seahawks game, and the Seahawks are waking up this morning in last place with a 2-4 record after losing to the Steelers in overtime. And after a stellar second half that included 5 completed throws under extreme pressure, backup quarterback Geno Smith tried to make a play in OT, but as we all know, it didn't end very well.
The play fake. Geno looks, pump fakes, now he's going to scramble. He fumbles the football. It's picked up by Bush, and Bush is dropped at his own 17-yard line. Geno Smith, his first scramble of the night forward for positive yards and has the ball knocked out of his hands. I think it might have been, I'm sorry to say, T.J. Watt who got there again for yet another big play. If we never see T.J. Watt again, it'll be too soon.
Okay, we're going to save our conversation for a couple of minutes. We're going to do it right after Heather's newscast at 9:33. But we didn't get that Cinderella ending that we hoped for, G. So what is next for the Seahawks?
They got to come back and practice really well and get ready for the New Orleans Saints on Monday night. That's going to be a tough game right there. And then the next week after that, they got the Jacksonville Jaguars. But right now, you know what they got to do? They got to just take it one game at a time, and I hate to sound like Russell Wilson when I say that, but that's the truth. So they got to take care of business this next game.
Okay. Well, Stacey or Joe Rost is going to join us next, and while we're at it, we need to ask, what is going on with those Huskies? This is the G and Ursula Show. Back to the G and Ursula Show, Monday morning edition. Just a reminder that our State Roofing text line is 888-973-5476. We want to hear from you. It was a wild comeback against the Steelers in primetime, but the Seahawks' second half rally unfortunately ended in overtime with a very painful loss because they were just that close. Stacey Joe Rost from 710 ESPN Seattle joins us now. Stacey, we're trying to make it not feel like a Monday.
Oh, no. Good luck.
So what happened? Can we play this play again,
sure,
and,
sure.
And you just tell me, what was Geno thinking?
The play fake. Geno looks, pump fakes. Now he's going to scramble. He fumbles the football. It's picked up by Bush, and Bush is dropped at his own 17-yard line. Geno Smith, his first scramble of the night forward for positive yards and has the ball knocked out of his hands. I think it might have been, I'm sorry to say, T.J. Watt, who got there again for yet another big play. If we never see T.J. Watt again, it'll be too soon.
I love him.
Love Rapes.
Okay, so the way he was carrying it just looked so awkward.
Yeah, I think it's a mix of two things. On the one hand, look, no one is looking at Geno Smith, who's the backup quarterback, saying, put this team on your back, Geno. This is on you, Geno. Like, no, it's Geno's job to just kind of keep you in the game. However, it is on every single player on offense, whether you're Russell Wilson or whether you're a fifth-string wide receiver, to protect the football. So no matter who you are, if you start turning the ball over, it's not going to make Pete Carroll happy. So it's I kind of go back and forth with feeling bad for Geno, not wanting to blame Geno, and then also being like, oh, man, you got to protect the ball. But there's also on the other side, T.J. Watt. Like, this isn't just some random dude, some random defender that just got lucky. This is a guy that was a menace for this team all day long. And in those moments, teams want their highest paid players, their impact players and their stars to make a difference. And TJ Watt did that for them.
What's next? Meaning, I know that the Seahawks play against the Saints on Monday Night Football.
Yeah.
But what we as fans right now, we're seeing them. Mm-hmm. They're 2-4. This kind of feels different over the last 10 years. What next for this team?
Well, you certainly can't afford losses. I would say for the rest of the season. For the rest of the season, you could maybe afford one more. So, like, before it just starts to get too out of hand, because in your division, you've got a 5-1 team, an undefeated team at 6-0 with the Cardinals. And then, you know, the 49ers are going back and forth. You can still pull ahead of them, but it's gonna get out of hand where you're just fighting at this point for unfortunately, with maybe LA for a wild card. You know what I mean? It is hard to win in this division. So I think, what I'm looking for is, how do they try to get a win at home? Since we know the answer is what's next win, I think it's like, well, how do you do it? And if the second half is any indication, Pete Carroll might want to start the game by focusing on the run.
Is there any possibility which I don't think they should, but is there any possibility of the Seahawks going out there and asking for another quarterback or sliding the DMs of another quarterback?
Just on Twitter. Hey, it's Pete. I mean, they never rule anything out. Carroll was asked about it this morning on 710 with Mike Salk and kind of had that same Carroll thing he always does where he's like, nothing's out of question. We'll always ask around. I just like, look, does Cam Newton want to come to a team where he's only going to be in like maybe 2 or 3 games and then like be benched again? Does Phillip Rivers want to come to a team where he's going to be asked to hand the ball off all the time and not pass? It's like, what's the incentive for another quarterback to sign here who isn't named Blake Bortles?
Well, but the reality is Geno actually did very well with the exception of that last crucial play.
That's the thing. If Geno doesn't make that mistake, we're all in here talking about how,
was a Cinderella story for sure.
Yeah, credit to him for doing what he did. Credit to Alex Collins. It's a completely different story.
Oh, speaking of Alex Collins, why did he disappear after the
suffered
half?
A hip injury. So Pete Carroll said was that he took a hit to his hip and his glute on the same side. So probably more than one hit on the same side. And eventually the team pulled him because he just couldn't go back in.
But he was able to find holes so quickly.
He was the first running back since week 15 of 2019, the first Seahawks running back to get 100 yards in a game. Chris Carson hasn't done that in a year.
Okay. Oh. Hey, G?
Yes.
Do I dare ask about the Huskies?
Oh, go ahead.
No,
I mean,
no,
I mean,
no,
I,
no. You know. Let's talk DK.
They have the same records right now.
Okay, wait,
the Seahawks,
I know. They do have
Seahawks
the same records, right? Yeah. Okay, I know. My husband is so disappointed. For the first time ever, he was like, should we just not have our season tickets anymore? I'm thinking, oh please.
No.
It's never going to happen, by the way. I mean,
well,
we've had those for over 25 years.
Look,
but
the Huskies, their upcoming game is against the worst team, not just in the Pac-12, but like maybe one of the worst teams in Division I football right now with Arizona.
Right.
No offense to our producer, Curtis Rogers, bear down. But if they lose to that team, I don't know how you don't make moves. I don't know how you don't make staffing moves or a quarterback move or do something.
Exactly. Exactly. G, you're very quiet.
I'm quiet because it's just going to be a little rough right now. And I'm quiet because for so long there has been an expectation and there has been success. And right now things are rough, right? Like things are really on the rough side considering what's going on with the Seahawks. So Seahawks and Huskies,
yes,
if you will. But wait, hold on. Cougs won?
Oh,
Cougs
yeah.
won. They beat Stanford. Hold on. There should be no. What do you mean? I know you're an alumni of University of Washington, Stacey. I get that. But this way, we are doing radio in the state of Washington. Mm-hmm. Shout out to them. I think Eastern Washington might have won too. So there's college teams here that are winning.
And there's always the Kraken.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Rolovich might be fired today, but I mean, the Cougs won, and so that's a feel good story.
Okay, I do need to ask about DK. Because is he playing to his level? Is he playing to
expectations? Oh, I don't think anyone on this team is playing to their level right now.
What the heck? That was another thing. I felt like he was like running in slow motion. It was like
It wasn't a great move. It wasn't a great move in overtime.
DK, what are you doing?
Yeah, he was DK was has been good this year. He hasn't necessarily been like the DK we all want, but that's because that bar keeps getting raised, right? He's so stellar that it keeps going up and up and up. And who would have thought that, like, you know, in his rookie season, you'd be like, oh, he didn't play like an all-pro, so it's really disappointing. But I mean, no player is meeting their bar right now. Bobby Wagner, Jamal Adams, Russell Wilson before he got hurt, right? Chris Carson, all of these guys. I'll leave, like, maybe Tyler Lockett out of it. Since he was stellar for the first couple of games, and obviously
and
Alex Collins.
Yeah. Okay, I should have asked this very early on, but the injury, that was heartbreaking to see too, Daryl Taylor.
Yeah.
So how's he doing?
So the latest update coming from that night, so he was taken to a hospital, and the CT scans were negative, meaning they didn't see like any significant damage or anything that would warrant, right, like an immediate like emergency surgery or anything. They're doing additional tests to like double and triple check everything, but so far, the report is like as good as it could be coming out of a scary situation, right? Still banged up, still hurt, but considering how it looked on the field, you've got a best case scenario.
Thank you, Stacey Joe.
Thanks, guys.
Appreciate your time. Hey, coming up next, Ursula and I, we have to talk about something, and it's if you are posting pictures on social media over a year and a half, and you have been talking about your weight loss and everything, should you be obligated to tell people if you had some surgery to help with that? We'll discuss all that next. It's G and Ursula.
It is 9:50. You are listening to the G and Ursula Show, and this is normally when we would do a We Need to Talk, and we are going to do it, but G has had to step away. He is dealing with a family situation, and so he is stepping away, and you know who just stepped in is Heather Bosch. And so this is a situation that actually G had come up with because it is something that affected someone in his circle. And so I thought it would be an interesting conversation because I'm seeing it happen a lot. And this is what it is. So a woman who is a friend of his has been documenting her dramatic weight loss.
Okay.
Now, if you go on TikTok, if you go on any social media, you will see a lot of people doing that, but especially on TikTok where you'll see people lose over 100 pounds or just an amazing amount of weight. And in many cases, they'll say how they did it, but in some cases, they won't share. And in this particular case, G's friend had a surgery. Either a gastric bypass or a gastric sleeve, which, again, makes your stomach smaller. So then
you're not as hungry.
Yeah. Exactly. So it's different than if you were to, or is it different? So that's the whole thing. So the question is, should you be compelled to share if you're sharing your weight loss journey and you've had surgery? Should you make that known as well?
Well, that's not minor surgery either.
No.
I would think if you are sharing things like I'm exercising, I'm eating right, and you had surgery, I personally would say you should disclose that as well. First of all, there's no shame. If you have to get a surgery to help you with that, that's perfectly fine. But also just to, you know, if you're claiming you lost all this weight just from diet and exercise, really, the journalist in me says, you're not being totally honest here.
You're not telling the full story. And I'm with you, actually. And I know G was going to argue that it's really nobody's business. And there's a point to be made there, too. It is nobody's business, but you've made it everybody's business to show your weight loss.
Exactly. If you're up there saying, look at me, I've lost a ton of weight. If you make it public, then you got to go all the way.
Right. In many cases now, there are more that this is a surgery that has become much, much more popular.
Yes.
And it is much more accepted than it was in years past. And I think because it's been done much more and successfully.
People are acknowledging that there are folks who can get honestly addicted to certain kinds of foods and it's their health's at risk if they're obese, quite frankly. So, yeah, there's no shame in it. But
yeah.
you know, if you're going to put it out there, I'm with you. You're going to put it out there. You should put it all out there.
Yeah, exactly. Because I think that in some cases, some people would also have this unrealistic idea that I'm going to have that kind of dramatic weight loss. In some cases, they're losing 60 or 80% of their excess weight within a year. That's really tough. You know, and as someone who has done a weight loss program where I had to, you know, I had lost a lot of weight, that's not easy.
No, it's
and
not.
It's also easy to gain it back.
People should be not under the delusion that if you're out there saying, hey, look, and I don't know this woman's story, she might have said absolutely nothing. In that case, well, you know,
exactly.
More power to you. But if you're talking about the diet and the exercise, you should do full disclosure about how much you're dieting, how much you're exercising, because it is a journey for anyone who's had a weight issue.
And I find it inspirational. And like you said, there's no shame. I think, hey, you made that decision too, because you still, even with that surgery, you do have to make some changes. You can't go back to your old ways. You do have to make some dramatic changes in your life. I have a friend who went through it, and she has lost 70 pounds.
Yeah, that's a really good point, too, that you don't go back to the way you've eaten before.
Well, you can't, because otherwise you could cause...
You get sick.
Exactly. You could make yourself really, really sick. Okay, we just have a minute left, but I know you're a huge Seahawks fan.
Oh, don't forget.
So how did you handle it yesterday?
I went to the opera, La Boheme.
Wait. You actually missed the game.
I DVR'd it. No, I DVR'd it. Okay. I did. And once again, we'll see, the last time we lost, I went to the ballet. So I'm DVRing
the
game.
So do we blame you then? Because normally I do much better if you're there.
You know, I'm not guilty. I blame the defense. You know, you can pick on poor Gino, but seriously, you know, unless when half your team doesn't seem to be, you know, in the game, you can't win that way. We had problems before Russell was hurt.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was hoping for that Cinderella story
Gino.
I mean, just imagine always being that backup.
Right.
And always praying that you win the game, but you also think, hey, when's my chance? And he finally has his chance, and he gets so close, and then it didn't happen.
But you know, the worst has happened. He got through the worst.
Yes, that's true. Absolutely. Well, thank you, Heather. Appreciate it. Appreciate it. And well, you can hear Heather's newscast coming up at 10:06. And then still ahead, we are going to have our reporters talk to us. Today is the COVID vaccine deadline. So what is that going to mean for transportation? What is that going to mean for our hospitals? What is that going to mean for public safety? You'll hear about that next on The Gian Ursula Show.